This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Joseph Szabo, who is the executive director of the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. They are primed to introduce their program called Onto 2050, a comprehensive regional plan to help the seven counties in the Chicago metro area and the 284 communities to develop and implement strategies that will address transportation, housing, economic development, open space issues, the environment, and a variety of quality of life issues. Basically, Joe said, if you don't control your own destiny, someone else will. And he talked about issues that will be in the report, such as climate change, making more walkable communities, innovative transportation, transforming our economy, and working with constrained resources. He said planning will be the key to whether the area will prosper or somewhat less than prosper. Planning, he said, is the unavoidable reality, and the past funding sources will not be reliable and inadequate, so we must need to learn how to leverage strengths and minimize areas of challenge. Infrastructure will be the key. Transportation made the Chicago metro area as important as it is, and we must continue to invest in order to have a prosperous future.
Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ed. And let me thank the City Club for the opportunity to come back and speak with you again. It's great seeing so many old friends in the audience, people going back to my time in local government in Riverdale. And I was talking with Don Orsino earlier, going back to when Don was a rookie train master. I was a rookie train conductor. And so it's hard to believe, Don, where both of us are today, but you're getting to retire. But anyway, I can't think of a better forum to come to talk about the issues that are facing our seven-county Chicagoland region and how together we can plot a brighter future for the region. Let me recognize the CMAP board members that are here. And I know our chairman was introduced, Mayor Bennett from Palos Hills. Our vice chairman, Rita Athis, is with us. Frank Beal, I believe. Yeah, Frank is with us. Mayor Matt Brawley, Mayor of Montgomery, was introduced earlier. I believe Leanne Redden is here from the RTA, and Peter Scozzi, all of our CMAP board members. Also would like to recognize the CMAP staff that are here, and if all of you could just stand up, I know there's a lot of you, but these are the dedicated men and women that literally think about the future, the health, the prosperity of this region every other day, or every single day, not every other day, every single day. I'd make a joke and say some days are better than others, but no, the fact of the matter is these folks, they really believe in this region and live and breathe the whole concept of regionalism. You know, when I spoke here last June, development of our next comprehensive plan, which is named Onto 2050, had only just begun. And at that time, I talked about the importance of acting as one region where we all work across jurisdictions for the sustained prosperity and quality of life that our 8.5 million residents deserve. CMAP, as you know, is the region's official long-range planning agency, and we were created in 2005, and our state and federal mandate is to integrate planning for land use and transportation as a means to shape economic growth and quality of life for our 284 municipalities. Our previous comprehensive plan, which was named Go to 2040, was adopted back in 2010, and it won several national awards. And so with Onto 2050 now in development and scheduled for adoption in October 2018, we're building on that earlier plan by fostering more tightly on several overarching principles. Before previewing a number of those anticipated recommendations, I want to describe to you the results from our 5 months of extensive public engagement, which began in April and ends tomorrow. Jack Welch, the former CEO of General Electric, once said, "Control your own destiny, or somebody else will." And another eloquent speaker, Yogi Berra, Yogi once said the same thing, but maybe just a little bit differently. Yeah, if you don't know where you're going, you might end up someplace else. So think about it. You know, it's only by planning that we can direct where it is that we're looking to go, and only by setting a clear direction and executing in accord with that plan that we can attain our chosen destiny. And to kind of morph Jack Welch and Yogi together, if you fail to control your own destiny, you're likely going to end up someplace else. So today, you're the first to hear what we have heard from residents during this round of public engagement on what we call five alternative futures for the metropolitan Chicagoland region. And each future describes factors that could significantly shape our region for decades to come. Now, these futures are not mutually exclusive. In reality, they're likely going to overlap. And so when we were out meeting with folks, we didn't ask the residents to choose from among them. And they're not predictions of what will happen, but they're a set of assumptions about what could happen, intended to help inform the planning process and generate dialogue. So when Onto 2050's development began last year, I set an ambitious goal for us to double the number of outreach contacts over those that were engaged during the development of GoTo 2040. And as I mentioned, that plan won several major awards, including one from the Transportation Research Board for its communication and outreach work. But I really wanted the bar to be set high as we engaged the residents from around the seven-county region to ensure that this plan was their plan. And with over a year remaining, we've already exceeded the 35,000 residents reached during last plan engagement and are well on the way to achieving our goal of doubling the previous total before the plan is adopted in October 2018. To date, more than 200 workshops have been held at a wide variety of locations, community rec centers, senior living centers, barns, schools, yeah, that's right, corporate conference rooms, a zoo, block parties and farmers markets, community colleges, health fairs, churches, a museum, and even a flower shop. And so the bottom line here is our staff will go anywhere, wherever people are, to discuss the region's future. And we've also deployed 20 kiosks across the region and held five forums on the alternative futures. And residents could also weigh in via web surveys and social media. And while the results of all these tools are not necessarily scientific, by reaching so many residents, we do get a clear sense of their concerns and aspirations. Now, because hearing from the youth is so inspiring and perhaps sometimes a little bit daunting, let me start there. And to put this into some context, 65% of the region's residents in 2050 are either kids today or they haven't been born yet. So let's start with some inspiration. One eighth grader says that in 2050, and I'll paraphrase a bit here, we will have flying cars, no more fossil fuels will contaminate the earth, and money will be long gone. Now, I think they meant that we won't need money anymore, but given our current fiscal crisis, the reality is that the money may be long gone by the time 2050 rolls around. So now, a more daunting comment from another middle grade student. I don't see myself living here in 2050. Too much drama and crime in my neighborhood. I want to be someplace quiet. Let's think about that one. Today's eighth grader will be about 46 in 2050, and we owe it to them to make this a region where they and their children can be safe and prosperous. And so let's look at the five alternative futures and how our region can meet its challenges and capitalize on its opportunities. So here's what we heard about changed climate. 40% of the people believe the most pressing factor on climate change is a lack of urgency due to competing priorities. They believe that there's a major gap between recognizing climate change and doing something about it. And the three most worrisome impacts are insufficient water supply, harm to life and property from floods and storms. Think Houston, Texas. And more intense impacts for vulnerable residents, including people with disabilities, low-income households, people of color, and older residents. They think it'll be most important to protect our energy supply and distribution network and our water systems. They said that issues surrounding water should be addressed regionally, not just locally. And while Lake Michigan might lead some to conclude that our region won't face water shortages, most realize that that's not true for the many communities in the region that rely on groundwater. Here's what we heard about walkable communities. 2/3 of the residents said that they prefer more walkable communities. 26% believe that the greatest benefit is that they're healthier overall, healthier for residents, for the environment, and for the local economy. But 25% said that their top concern is that it may be more expensive to live in walkable communities, and that this could further displace residents with limited means. They suggested more homes near transit and local jobs would make walkable communities more accessible to people of all incomes while making it easier for people to get to work. Well, we heard about innovative transportation. Nearly half of the residents are somewhat comfortable with autonomous vehicles, but they think that more testing is needed and that they may be too expensive for many residents. And they believe even with these new options that roads will still be crowded and that we'll still need public transportation. 31% said new bus and rail routes and extended rail lines should be the top investment priority. Also high on people's list, focusing first on existing transportation infrastructure, which CMAP has always endorsed, and sharing as a region in the responsibility for transportation funding and investments. So what we heard about a transformed economy. Residents considered how economic shifts could transform our region. Nearly 45% said technology will require residents to keep acquiring new skills, both more often and more quickly, as obsolescence happens faster and faster. Nearly 2/3 think that job training should be geared towards emerging industries and that the region should create conditions that allow more people to innovate and make their own jobs. Concern was expressed that residents of disconnected communities, particularly minorities, will be unable to participate in our regional economy. And over again, we heard that neither infrastructure nor geography should determine whether a person gets a good education. For our economy to thrive, everyone needs to be participating in it fully. We also asked residents to consider how the region must adapt to decreasing support from federal and state government. And more than half believe that their municipality will have to charge higher local taxes and fees. Besides transportation, people name social service programs as the top priority for public funding. 30% said those that benefit from infrastructure and services should pay for them. Relatedly, the top two ways to fund necessary road improvements were charging tolls to drivers and charging more to bypass congestion, another CMAP priority known as congestion pricing. And many also suggested a VMT tax where drivers pay per mile traveled. Many thought that the tax structure needed to be changed, and they're concerned that constrained federal and state revenues will disproportionately affect vulnerable populations. Now, the future that's ahead of us, of course, is always uncertain. But by understanding the trends and using careful analysis and broad stakeholder engagement, we can formulate the most impactful recommendations and shape our future. And so this brings me to our draft Onto 2050 preview report, which is another opportunity for us to take the pulse of the region. Issued for public comment back in June, it builds on 2 years of research, analysis, and conversations with the region's residents, its businesses, transportation providers, and civic groups. And while it's premature to say exactly what Onto 2050 will say, the preview describes draft recommendations across 3 overarching principles that will guide the overall plan. Principle number 1, inclusive growth. the region's long-term prosperity requires increased economic opportunity and improved quality of life for all of our residents. Principle number two, prioritize investment. In a future with finite resources, we'll need to make smart decisions, the smartest decisions about investments across our sectors, infrastructure and land use and the economy, to ensure the greatest impact for every penny that we spend. Principle number three, resilience. As a region, we need to plan collaboratively so communities, infrastructure, and other systems can thrive in the face of uncertain economic, technological, and environmental shifts. Now, as I mentioned, the recommendations are not set in stone yet at this stage of the plan's development. So with that caveat out there, let me preview a sense of where the plan is headed. In the area of inclusive growth, one recommendation would be to provide paths to jobs with meaningful economic opportunity. CMAP and partners should identify growing industries and jobs that give residents opportunity for upward mobility. Workforce development stakeholders should prioritize training to help lower-income and minority residents enter these industries and participate fully in the regional economy. In the area of prioritized investment, one recommendation would be to focus on infill, capital investment, and technical assistance in the region's employment centers, transit-rich areas, downtowns, and disinvested communities, and establish regional priorities for focusing assistance accordingly. In the area of resilience, one recommendation would be to coordinate across jurisdictions to promote collaborative action on all these critical issues. And to some extent, the region has already begun to achieve this through the growing collaboration of the seven county board chairs to attract and retain businesses at the regional level. Similar coordination is going to be needed on issues now from stormwater to transportation funding to workforce development. The dilemma that is faced by long-term planners like us at CMAP is to balance the need to inspire our region with the equally important need to confront harsh realities. And so in that spirit, let me take up an unavoidable reality that, you know, we have reached a critical fork in the road. The state and federal funding streams that we've historically relied upon are no longer reliable, nor are they sufficient to meet our growing infrastructure needs. Our analysis estimates that the region will need roughly $500 billion over the next 30 years simply to operate and maintain the transportation systems that we have. And the analysis further shows that based on what we can reasonably expect to generate from current revenue streams, we're going to face a $24 billion shortfall to meet that basic need, that fundamental need, and this doesn't even allow for any improvements or expansion. And by neglecting our infrastructure, the region's in danger of losing what has always been our strategic economic advantage, that the very tools that we've historically relied upon to grow our economy. And so we have to control our own destiny. While state and federal funding should continue to play a central role, our region must do as many of our peers have done: implement a sustainable source of regional revenues that can leverage other public and private investments. CMAP is developing a financial plan to accompany Onto 2050 that will cover the gap and allow the region and its economy to flourish. And not only in transportation, but also for these carefully prioritized projects in open space and water and other factors that move the needle on quality of life and economic growth. But this can't happen without the region stepping forward with its own source of revenues. We compete on the national and global stage against regions whose public investments are outpacing our own. In the Midwest, Kansas City and Indianapolis are regions that have already moved to shape their own destinies by generating their own revenues. Saw a presentation at a freight conference yesterday on St. Louis, and I got to tell you, St. Louis is about ready to eat our lunch. And that's a real turn of events if you understand the 150 years history when it was them neglecting transportation infrastructure, you know, focusing solely in those days on riverboat traffic. Well, Chicago went with the modern technology railroads, and, you know, everybody knows what the shift was in economic power. But they're motivated, and they're organized, and I was pretty impressed with what I saw yesterday. But for me, it really was a light bulb of how much work that we have to do. Otherwise, we could end up having the tables turned on us like we did on St. Louis 150 years ago. Others that have moved forward on regional revenues, Denver, Atlanta, Austin, Seattle, and so many others. And so we can't continue to fall behind. By making a commitment to modernize our infrastructure, by carefully prioritizing the investments to ensure the highest level of return, we can choose a destiny that will increase prosperity and quality of life for our residents. Our federal mandate requires on to 2050 to include the region's official financial plan for transportation investments. And no federally funded transportation project can be built without being included in our fiscally constrained plan. To support existing infrastructure and make those surgical, strategic additions to it, the required financial plan must assume that regional revenues are going to be available. Now, determining the mechanisms and the amounts for these revenues will be central to the debate and discussion in coming months as we draft the plan for public comment in June and ultimate adoption in October of 2018. But CMAP has built a reputation for working with its partners to make the tough choices about funding projects that maximize benefits to the region. We've long advocated for merit-based, prioritized project selection. And so together as a region, we have to take the next bold step of building consensus to enact a sustainable revenue source to support these high-priority projects. And so the region needs your support and your ideas. So let the discussion begin. Chicagoland grew into a global metropolis due to infrastructure investment, particularly in transportation. And this has always been our competitive advantage. Regional revenue, strategically invested, will make our future less uncertain. It'll provide the tools to ensure that Chicagoland remains the undisputed jewel of the Midwest and the transportation hub of North America. And this is the destiny that we want for future generations. So I'll close on a quote. You know, the current road before us might be filled with many potholes, but in the words of Dolly Parton, yeah, good old Dolly, if you don't like the road you're walking, start paving another one. So with that, I'll take your questions. Thank you.
Joe, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we have a few pre-submitted questions. And if anybody has a question that they would like to ask of Joe, like Larry is down here, just write out your question and hold it up, and our crack staff will come around and pick it up. Okay. Wow. You're going to have to, some tough questions here, Joe. The first one is from Carrie McLean. What do you expect the impact of the gig economy, GIG, to be on Chicagoland?
So, I mean, these are the types of questions that we're working through right now, and part of the alternative futures was talking about how technology is, in fact, going to transform our economy. And so I'm not going to stand here today and say I have the answer to that, but this is exactly the type of questions that we're trying to work through, knowing that technology is going to be changing that much more rapidly, more quickly and quickly and quickly. And it's so difficult today to try and envision where we're going to be at 30 years from now. And yet we know it's coming. And so that is specifically why, you know, one of the alternative futures that we've been working through is a transformed economy based on technology.
Thank you. This is from Mike Weiser, City Club member, Commuter Cars Corporation, CCC. With the popularity of single-occupant car commuting, how will future trends support this form of transportation given that the current transportation conversation is dominated by shared mobility?
So again, good question, and part of the work that we've been doing both in our work on enhancing and growing walkable communities, since that's where the trend is taking us, and also better understanding where the evolutions in transportation technology are going to take us and how as a region we have to adapt to that. We're just completing our analysis now on how we grow our transit ridership. One of the goals in GoTo 2040 was to double transit ridership by the year 2040, and certainly we won't be backing away from that recommendation, although we likely will be looking at it more in terms of market share rather than actual raw numbers. But, we're doing the analysis now and should have a report out actually within the next couple of days on those things that best drive transit ridership growth. And so more to come.
Thank you, Joe. This is from Chris Hall, City Club member with Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill. His question is, or her question could be, should the region be concerned that population growth is slower than other U.S. urban regions? Does quantity or quality count?
Yeah. So, obviously, quality is important, but quantity matters because it's normally an indicator of the economic health of the region. And so this is one of the biggest reasons why inclusive growth will be an overarching principle across the whole plan. In my talk a year ago, I talked about the fact that there's a pretty good body of analysis that's been done, and the fact that those regions that are more inclusive in their growth end up having longer periods of economic prosperity and greater amounts of growth. And it's estimated that we're leaving about 20% of GDP on the table by not growing inclusively as some of our counterparts. And so it really comes back to driving the regional economy. If we're inclusive about that, if the economy truly becomes that much more robust, our population numbers will follow.
Okay, this is from Lou Harris, not the pollster, by the way, with Your Betterment, Inc., City Club member. His question is, what steps are you taking to change the negative story about Chicago into a positive message?
Yeah. Our work is not necessarily about messaging. Our work is about research, analysis, and bringing forth those recommendations that are based in reality. We try to look at things certainly not through rose-colored glass, but not, is all gloom and doom either. And when you take a look at the issues that we're facing in some of our neighborhoods, the horrible issues that we're facing with the homicides, much of this does come back again to the economic argument. It comes back to the arguments that we're talking about in wanting to advance inclusive growth. Comes back to the arguments we talk about having these openings for progressing into jobs that are into, those emerging sectors to where there's long-term career, viability that you can support a family. And people have to have hope. Our work, it isn't about, fancy messaging. It is about doing the groundwork, the grunt work of research, analysis, and based on the facts that we have, coming forward to all of you with the recommendations on how we move forward collaboratively as a region.
Okay, thanks, Joe. We have a couple more questions here. I'm going to combine these two questions. They're from Benjamin Harbor with CDM Smith and Larry Andradich. Both are non-City Club members. Both Ben and Larry, we invite you to join. $50. You'll be with the elite, 2,500 other people. Come on. Okay. Both of their questions are similar. What do you see as the most probable sources of future revenue streams, and what are some of the revenue methods that you're discussing, such as referendums and so forth?
Yeah. So we're beginning to do that analysis now to understand both the pros and cons based on the facts of different revenue sources, which also then leads to ultimately having the difficult political conversations. And God knows this is a really, really tough time to be talking about generating new revenues. And yet, you know, I have an obligation, I have a responsibility to come out here and present the facts to you that we face a critical shortfall in simply maintaining and operating the transportation infrastructure that we have. And so the analysis is being done back at the shop. Obviously, we're taking a look at motor fuel tax increases and what that generates and, you know, the pros and cons of that. VMT continues to be on the table and part of the discussion and the pros and cons and challenges with that. Sales tax increase, perhaps using the RTA's authority and the pros and cons of that approach. License fees, you know, would be one of the items on the table. But, you know, it's one of the reasons why I throw this out here today is to start generating that conversation. We're not going to sit here and say we have all the answers. We do know the approaches that historically have been used. You know, there's no question that the gas tax on both the federal and state basis, you know, hasn't been increased in well over 20 years. I believe the last analysis I saw on the federal was, I believe, 91, and purchasing power is eroded by 40% in that period of time. And so that may be the more politically viable way to go, although, again, this is a very tough time to have that conversation. But I have some concerns about strictly going with a transportation-based fee, because with the lockbox, that's going to lock in those dollars solely for transportation investments. And while that is the bulk of our work and an important part of our work, the work in stormwater management, you know, in water, in open space, and several of these other critical issues also drive, you know, the needle on quality of life and economic prosperity. And so I do have some concerns about tying our hands without having the appropriate flexibility to go forward with other projects that are very, very important to the local communities and local residents. But I have to add in, because I emphasize this in my talk, this comes back to prioritized investment and making sure that we are doing the sound analysis so every penny we spend is giving us the maximum return. And I think this has to be a part of the bargain. If we go out to the public, it's going to be a tough enough sell, but they have to believe that they're going to get what they've been promised if we're going to have any chance of, you know, success.
Very good, Joe. We have a couple more questions. I tell you, we're getting some great questions today. Sarah, your dad would really be proud of the kind of questions we're getting here today. From one planner to another, this is from Mary Sue Barrett with the Metropolitan Planning Council. You didn't think we would give you a pass, did we? Absolutely. What incentives can CMAP support to encourage government consolidation and service sharing? This is one way to free up resources for inclusive growth and infrastructure investment.
Well, thank you, Mary Sue, for a good question. Glad to see you here. I call MPC our cousin. We might be a unit of government. They're a you know, civic organization, but we work so much on so many of the same principles. Government consolidation and shared service will continue to be a big issue for us. As you know, it was in the 2040 plan. We will not abandon that in 2050. And it really is about generating that dialogue. It often is held at the county level when the seven county board chairs are together. But continuing to recognize those opportunities where local communities do have the opportunity, particularly in sharing. You know, I think there's local mayors who will tell you there's been some great examples that have been very successful. There are other times where it isn't necessarily, you know, the complete panacea, that these things vary on a case-by-case basis. But, you know, understanding where there are redundant units of government, and, you know, Chairman Cronin's done a great job on this up in DuPage, really focusing on this and looking at those opportunities for consolidation, continued sharing. It's going to continue to be a priority for us.
Okay, thank you. This is from the Davidoff tag team, John and Jackie. with Davidoff Mission-Driven Business Strategies. So I don't want to separate male-female, so we're going to do both questions. What is Chicago's biggest barrier to being successful with Onto 2050? And Jackie's question is, in what ways are issues the Chicagoland region faces unique, more challenging, or distinctive from other Midwest cities or nationally?
Mm-hmm. What was the first one again?
First one was, what's the biggest barrier to being successful with Onto 2050?
Yeah. No, I think obviously the issue that I close with, which is the funding question, and certainly it's not the only one. I hate to take it back just to money, but when you do take a look at what the shortfall is, the fact of the matter is, you know, that we're not going to be able to modernize or improve our transportation network without additional revenues. We're not going to be able to do as much as we need to do in the inclusive growth realm without additional revenues. And you know, obviously there are always the political challenges that you have 284 communities with 284 local mayors. I once was one, you know, and mayors like to cling to their own autonomy. I understand it. I get it. And that's why land use decisions still remain with those local communities, those local mayors. But our job through our research and analysis is to inform the debate, inform the conversation through our local technical assistance program. You know, roughly 20 to 25, 30 times a year, we're invited in to help local communities with local projects that are about their vision but are consistent with the long-term plan. And so these are the ways that we exert the best influence that we can. Second question was?
I'll pull it out of my pocket.
No, you put it away.
Okay.
Unique.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So I think, you know, there's always unique issues for every region and every community. By the same token, you know, there's often a lot of similarities. I think, you know, that we believe that we have not been as inclusive in our economy as some of our peers have been, and they've seen better economic growth, more sustained, longer periods of economic growth than we have. And so that's one issue that is somewhat unique to us. One of the unique advantages that we clearly have had historically has been our transportation network. And this is why Chicagoland, the region, developed into the economic powerhouse that it is today. And it wouldn't have happened without those transportation investments. And so I think that's one of the unique advantages that we have, but it's been neglected. And, you know, we run the risk of losing our competitive advantage if we don't move forward with renewed investment.
Final question. Could you discuss the impact of what's been happening in our neighboring states, Wisconsin and Indiana primarily, on the Chicagoland region, the seven counties, the 284 communities?
Yeah. So we believe that working as a mega region is important. Obviously, our official jurisdiction under state and federal mandate is the seven counties, the 284 communities, and the city of Chicago. But our relationship is very, very strong with the counterparts in southeast Wisconsin, Northwest Indiana, and Southwest Michigan. I meet with my peers up there on a quarterly basis. We move those meetings around to make sure that everybody gets a chance to host. Whenever we're at you know, somebody's facility, it's their responsibility to have their staff present on you know, something critical that they're working on to better inform, you know, its neighbors. We do believe that our region best prospers when the mega region as a whole best prospers. And so, you know, we don't look at our neighbors negatively, you know, just like you wouldn't or shouldn't in your community, your neighborhood strongest when, you know, you have tight social connections with your neighbors. We believe that having the tight business connections with our counterparts in the neighboring states is very important also.
Okay, let's everybody give Joe Szabo a big round of applause.